The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 30th of August, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals, SML, a ticker there. And Peter discusses the recent updates of the company's Lee Creek Copper Mine and the Redmore Tin and Tungsten Project. Also on the podcast, Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer at Nkondisi Energy, NCCL, a ticker there. And Hanno talks through today's update for the company's integrated 300 megawatt power and coal mine project in Mozambique. Plus, Greg Bandy, first time on the podcast, Managing Director of Red Emperor Resources, RMP, is a ticker. And Greg talks about the upcoming drilling of the Winx prospect located on the western blocks of North Slope of Alaska with operator 88 Energy. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers SSE, Hayes, and Amigo, all big companies with news out today. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs too.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Whale, Executive Director of Strategic Minerals, SML. And I've got to congratulate you on that as well, Peter, because it's a newly appointed Executive Director, aren't you?
Indeed. Hi, Justin. Good to talk to you. Yeah, it was one of the many pieces of recent news flow that we've had recently.
Yeah, well, I know you've been working hard there, and you've often come on the podcast, with John. So obviously, it's going in the right direction. Listen, for people who are tuned in, so they're new to the podcast or they're not quite familiar with the company, could you summarise? I know you've got a lot going on there at Strategic. So summarise what the business is all about, please, Peter.
Certainly. I'll try and go for the one sentence version, which is quite tricky, actually. So Strategic Minerals, SML, is a profitable, diversified miner with differing stages of operations across various developed jurisdictions covering different materials where we believe there are long-term prospects for growth. How about that?
That was good. I like that. And so let's go into some of those bits and pieces then, some news you've released. And I can see the last two things you've talked about, Lee Creek Copper Mine. You've also updated on a Redmore tin project there. What do you want to chat about, Peter? Go for it.
Before I cover those in detail, mm-hmm. I'll just sort of rewind somewhat on some of the recent news we've had. And I'll actually go back to our AGM, which was in June. We had an AGM and shareholders evening. And, you know, irrespective of our company, I would just really, really endorse any shareholders to make the time to go to AGMs, to attend events where you can actually see the whites of the eyes of the boards of the companies you're investing in. Remember, they are your companies, and you know, if the board doesn't give you the right sense of where things are going, you need to ask questions. And I feel that with that in mind, we had a very decent attendance. We answered every question, both formally in the AGM session and then informally afterwards over drinks. And I feel that, you know, I'm sure if you ask any shareholder that attended, they went away very satisfied. Regardless of what they thought of our company, they were satisfied that there was no question that we hid away from. We answered everything, and we achieved our objective. So I think thanks to everyone who attended. We'll do the same thing next year, I'm sure. But please make the effort to attend these sort of events. It makes a big difference. So further to that, recently we had a grant of options across quite a number of people, which demonstrate how diverse and widespread of the team that we have underneath the board. And also we granted options to Jeff Harrison, who is our recent non-exec appointment. We had some options exercises as well from John, Alan and myself. My recent appointment, I wouldn't want to read too much into this. It's a formalization of what's been occurring for some time. It emphasizes the amount of time I spend on SML, my commitment to it, and the long-term future. So it's really just an organic process that's perhaps already been happening anyway. So let's talk about Redmore.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that I feel at the moment, historically, perhaps Redmore is, it sounded like an interesting story. It's a UK project. It's tin in Cornwall. You know, we've talked about Poldark and things like that. But perhaps people have just thought, well, we're spending money. Where's the end game? Does it create any value? Right now, I think we're very close to that pivot point where a greater appreciation by the market of the value is there. And the example I would give is the recent release we gave. The share price rose that day, which, you know, I know one day is nothing to read too much into, but the share price had risen the day before as well. So often on AIM, you see a weakness on news or anticipation of news and things like that. But I do sense in both the coverage that I've seen out there for this project and some of the more detailed understanding that's going on, that there is perhaps a sea change in realising some value. So in terms of what we're doing at the moment, there's a drilling program which is ongoing. At this stage, I think we're currently on the third and fourth holes, finishing up those, moving forward of an eight hole drill program. It's quite likely, subject to confirmation, that we'll extend that further. We are looking at some of the assays at the moment, and they should be released soon. The last update showed, at least optically, what we were seeing in some of the cores, and it looked, honestly, more exciting than perhaps we expected. Eyeballing calls is one thing. Assays tell you the real story. But we are actually pretty encouraged by what we're seeing. And the drilling is at least achieving what we're expecting. And don't forget, this drilling is infill drilling to enhance the existing resource we have. It's also drilling some virgin ground. We're going deeper to see if our modelling of the resource actually ties up. And the indications are that that's pretty likely that it is the case. And it's quite exciting to drill virgin ground, albeit with some risk adjustment around it. We're not just sticking a hole in the middle of nowhere. We're putting a hole where we believe that the geology suggests the mineralization will be occurring. And there's certainly been a lot of tungsten cropping up, and it's, you know, perhaps less tin, but we weren't perhaps expecting tin at these depths in terms of the way things manifest. So I think the other point to reiterate is we've always said we're here for the long term. We're here to build a mine, but that's not just about us building a mine, SML. We're in a partnership with New Age, and it's very unlikely that the two of us together would raise the finances and do this on our own. There's going to be project finance. There are going to be potential partners or collaborations. Potentially, the whole project is spun off into a new vehicle. I mean, every option is available. But the underwriting of the project that we're doing at the moment is definitely providing the seeds for this transaction to go the distance. We have the intangible issue as well, which is the great support of the local community, which you can never underestimate. So I feel at the moment things are all pointing in the right direction. These latest drill results, I think, should help underline that as well. So really sense things are coming together. And we're really, really pleased with everything. So that's a really good backdrop to have for a project that perhaps people have been questioning what's really happening here. Tin isn't always the sexiest material out there either.
Yeah, but you pointed out last time it's in demand, isn't it? Or one of the hot commodities out there.
I think it very much will be. The demand is very solid. And there is an acknowledged deficit coming, much like some of the other commodities out there. But tin is a much tighter market. Mm-hmm. All you need as well is for tin to get some usage potential in some of the EV space, or you know, more in the core of the EV space, perhaps with batteries as opposed to just circuitry and other applications. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic changes significantly. Tin as a commodity has been pretty much flatlining for some time, around $20,000 as well. The year we entered this project, it rose about 40%, which was a nice backdrop to have. But since then, it's not really gone anywhere. So I think that partly highlights tin is off the radar. Tungsten is even more esoteric in terms of the way that it is not exchange traded. There are long-term contracts. It's had a reasonable rally and come back a bit recently as well. But these things can move very quickly, and no one will be paying attention until they've gone up 30%.
Yeah, okay. And so I mentioned that, you know, I noticed in the release there, John says the 2018 drilling program is designed with the expectation of delineating a sufficient resource to justify proceeding to a pre-feasibility study in 2019. So that's the way it's headed then.
That's right. And each one of these steps, you know, successful drilling program and assays to bring about a better resource, that moves the project along. It gives you the ability to then do pre-feasibility. We've already had meetings and discussions with people who are watching the project carefully, and it's a question of, well, when you have something that makes sense, we definitely would like to talk. And we're not just drilling away and thinking, what should we do next? We've got a long-term plan and strategy here, and there's definitely interest in general for UK projects, and I'm not saying specifically tin or tungsten, I'm saying mining projects in the UK in general. You've got what Sirius Minerals are doing, and I think that's definitely changed the perception of what's possible in the UK at this time. Mm-hmm. Even Wolf is starting maybe to move in the right direction. They've got great supports from their largest shareholder, and again, there's a successful project there, subject to tungsten prices and financing.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go into Lee Creek Copper. And as you know, you say tin isn't particularly sexy or perceived as sexy, even though there's going to be sort of demand there. But copper definitely is seen as the next hot thing, you know, especially with the EVs. So I think, you know, a bit of excitement has been attached to this program, a project. Take us through what's happening, if you could, Peter.
Sure. And on copper as well, that's had a big retrace recently. Mm-hmm. I guess from our perspective, we're not selling any copper at the moment, so it doesn't really impact us. I would hope that next year when we're selling copper, the price has rebounded and the dynamics kind of come into play there. So again, that presents, if people are looking at stocks that have got depressed because copper has come down, if these are not producers, and I'm sure we can think of many of them, but they will be probable or most likely producers, then therein is an opportunity. For Lee Creek at the moment, the big picture is very much we're going about our business very carefully, very methodically. We are looking for the best risk-adjusted way to increase the chances that we can successfully produce copper next year at Lee Creek, where others have made a big hash of things. So we're very much focused on having the right people in place, learning from the past mistakes, doing the sort of things that perhaps other people didn't do. For example, the met test drilling that's going on at the moment that's nearly done. That's the first time for about 40 years anybody's done any, despite people have been trying to mine material. And it's all very well saying, okay, well, I can see there's copper around here, let's load up tons of material and process it. But if the grade in the first place wasn't sufficient, or the process wasn't correct, you're just wasting your time and wasting money. And in simple terms, that is a part of what's happened in the past. So we want to make sure we know what we've got before we decide the recipe, before we decide how we go about it. And there's no question, Jonathan Trutha, who's the project manager there, is very confident in terms of this will be possible, this is leachable, this is where the high grade is. But we're going through the process to ensure that that's correct. And all the indications are, you know, this is, I don't want to belittle this process as being, if you like, a formality or an admin phase, but perhaps relatively in mining terms it is. We're doing our formal DD on this project to make sure before we turn the power on and start wasting money that we're producing copper. And there's a, you know, not just a proof of concept. So, and again, go ahead.
What is the next sort of stage or step in the process here then? And you say you're hoping to start sort of producing. Is it next year? And what is the potential here, Peter?
Sure. So at the moment, the met drilling is virtually complete. We'll have some assays and assessments on that, which help us give the flow sheet to design the processing in the most efficient way. There'll be various elements of the stages of getting things going. And also to reiterate the bigger project area here, this is a multi-phase strategy. Mm-hmm. We're getting back into production at the Mountain of Light, and that's where the higher grade in situ material is literally right there, is low cost to process. We're going to look at the Linda area further down the line. There's near surface ore there. And then there's also exploration upside, perhaps looking to go deeper. Who knows whether there can be some copper sulfide, etc. There's not been any exploration in the area. And remember, we own 100% of this asset. Everything we do is creating value for the company, which is feeding through to our balance sheet. The RNS that was out yesterday gives an awful lot of detail for what's been going on over the summer. People have perhaps thought, well, there hasn't been any updates on this. Are they all on holiday? Absolutely not. You know, every day people have been working on this, and there's perhaps the RNS doesn't give complete sort of credence to that. But overall, there's an awful lot of detail in there. This is a serious project that demands a lot of work and attention. So I'm very confident, John's very confident, he was down there yesterday, that we have something here which is going to result in production next year. And to your question, I mean, nothing has really changed. We're talking an initial ramp up to around 200 tons a month. Mm-hmm. And that'll be it. With the offtake at 85% of the LME price. So, as I said earlier, we're not concerned about where copper is now. I'd be more concerned about where copper is during next year. So, and as we know, it can change a great deal, and that will feed through to our bottom line. But regardless of where copper is, this is a low-cost operation, and therefore, yeah, very decent margins.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, yeah, lots going on, Peter, and we haven't even mentioned, you have to come back on when you do update on the other products as well, because I know it's all going well. But for now, Peter, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are still not following the story, come on, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so I'll do three reasons. One's a big reason, and then two smaller ones. So the big reason is the value proposition at the present time. We've got cash in the bank, we're profitable, we're fully funding our operations. I would expect there's going to be a lot of catalysts to close the gap to fair value here. As an investor, if you look at the chart profile, you're not buying a spike. There's a clear, decent entry point here. John and Alan and I all exercised options recently, which were effectively close to the market price. The board have now got over 6% of the company. We've got our next tranche of options, which don't vest until the share price hits 5.5p, which is some multiples of the current level. Secondly, news flow. We've got four active projects. Lee Creek and Redmore we've already touched on. We've got CARE as well. There's various developments going on there at the moment. Cobras are our kind of backbone operation, where it's effectively our cash flow. We've got issues which everyone knows about with our main client. Clearly, that situation is underwritten for now, but once we can get things properly solved there, then the revenue can be even higher. And thirdly, it's a strong board and a very extended management team, as evidenced by the options grant recently. There was a long list of people involved. Everyone is incentivized to see the share price at least hitting 5.5p.
Marvellous stuff. Peter, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hanno Pengilly, Chief Development Officer of Ncondesi Energy, NCCL. Hanno, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, you've done a bit of a general update, and we'll go through that in a bit. But for people new to the podcast or not familiar with the company, give them a 30-second summary as to what Ncondesi is all about, please, Hanno.
Sure. So Ncondesi is an integrated coal mine and power project located in the Tet province in northern Mozambique, looking to develop a 300-megawatt coal-fired power plant project, supplying power into the Mozambican grid. And we are currently in negotiation with General Electric and China Machinery Engineering Corporation for the parties to take a 60% stake in the integrated project and help us finalize development, financing, construction, and operation.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, the general update is regarding the shareholder loan restructuring process, and also you've got a bit there on the joint development agreement. So let's go into the loan. Explain the background to this and what's happening, please, if you could, Hanno.
Sure. So for those not aware, we currently have an existing shareholder loan of about $5.1 million on our balance sheet. That loan is due to mature on the 2nd of September, so this Sunday. And we were, this announcement is basically just to let the market know that we have full lender support to restructure the loan, as we had previously announced. And we're in a good position to conclude this restructuring during the month of September. The restructuring is a good deal for shareholders, and I think sends a positive signal to the market on the underlying value of the project. With the restructuring including a 12-month extension of the loan, as well as convertibility into equity at a premium to today's share price. I think it was a 33% premium on the day of announcement, mm-hmm. Looking at a 10p conversion. So I think, again, a good signal to the market. Mm-hmm. I think the important thing to say here is that this loan was originally set up as a bridging facility 3 years ago to help bridge finance the company while it was concluding a deal with a different partner, which subsequently fell through before GE and CMEC became involved. And so it was never designed to stay on the balance sheet for this long. And it basically means that the restructuring process is more labor intensive than one would expect, particularly given that some of our larger institutional loan holders, who are also shareholders, have their own various internal approval processes they have to go through for the loan restructuring. And the long and short of it is that it's a tricky thing to manage and restructure. But we have the full support of our lenders. Although the loan is maturing at the end of this week, everybody is on board to finalize the restructuring. So I think that's just a good update to the market to let them know we've got that all under control. And again, we are, we're well positioned to close this thing out in September, and very much looking forward to having this behind us. So that's that piece, Justin.
Yeah, well, let's go into your potential strategic partners here. I've held meetings in Maputo and with the state power utility EDM, and of course Ministry of Mineral Resources. But you say here, I mean, reading this, and it says in the meetings, both EDM and MIREME emphasize the need to align the project development timeline with current regional market environment and planning, as well as the need for a support package to progress the project and the JDA. These are currently under negotiation. So explain that to me.
Sure. So that needs a bit of unwinding. And look, I think the note to make here is that we're at a stage of the process here where we, you know, when we're talking about the project, it very much needs to fall in line with what government and EDM want in the public domain. So, you know, we've had to release a statement which has had various approvals before it was allowed to be let out. So, you know, unfortunately, it does need a bit of unpacking. But essentially what this means is that we were able to conclude meetings that were planned in early August. We met with both EDM, which is the national power utility, which will be looking to be the 100% off-taker for the power, as well as the Minister of Energy, who's part of the department, Mirame. And you know, basically, in those meetings, we presented an update of the project as well as our updated tariff proposal, and we made those presentations with our partners GE and CMEC. And basically, I think the good news here is that, you know, we are moving on to the next phase, and you know what that next phase requires is two things. The first one is that, you know, this is a fairly big project. It requires significant allocation of resources, both on our side, on General Electric and CMEX side, but also on the government and EDM side. They will need to allocate, you know, resources to help progress the various agreements that need to be put in place to get this project to financial close. And what the statement is basically saying is that our project currently, we can deliver this thing by 2022. And that's by nature of the fact that we are probably one of the most, if not the most advanced project in the country, as well as the fact that, you know, we're the only project that's actually identified an equity partner who can finance and operate this thing, because these things are billion-dollar projects, and you know, big question mark is who's going to fund it. So we're ready to go, and I think that's the important thing. We've delivered the tariff. We have the partners. We know how we're going to fund the thing. The real question then comes from government side to say that, well, look, they've released a 10-year strategy document. In that 10-year strategy document, they've alluded to 300 megawatts of coal-fired energy being brought onto the grid by 2023. So that's about a year later than when we can deliver it. And basically what needs to happen here is that there needs to be an agreement between everyone as to what the updated development timetable is and how resources are then allocated to that timetable. So it's a very, it sounds fairly simple, but it's actually quite a complicated process in that, you know, quite a lot of planning and resource allocation needs to be agreed upon and aligned, particularly between the government as well as the national state power utility, who don't necessarily have the same views. The important message here is that we've sat around a table and we've all agreed that, you know, the project is back at a level where we need to get this timetable realigned. And historically, we had that with our previous development partners, but when that partnership fell through, and we started the new process with GE and CMEC, we have lost a bit of time in that process, and now we need to sort of get everybody realigned. So that's that part of the process. And I think the second part of the process, which is in my mind even more important, is that we're at a stage where GE and CMEC are about to commit significant resources and, you know, in particular cash to the project, both from a development perspective, but even in the more near term in terms of various resources to finalize the JDA. And what they've requested before that is they've requested, you know, a form of support from government, from EDM, for the project. Obviously, Nkondesi has various support agreements in place. We have an offtake MOU with EDM. We have a power framework agreement signed with the Department of Energy. So, you know, from our perspective, a lot of documentation is already in place. But for GE and CMEX specifically, they have asked for sort of something to provide them with more comfort to be able to motivate the internal resources to finalize the JDA. Now, that's not, they haven't requested something that's a binding document or a serious negotiation. I think it's literally what we're looking for here is a form of support, whether it be a letter of support or a non-binding MOU, where we're currently negotiating what the key support terms in that document are, and that's currently what's under negotiation. But most importantly is that both government and EDM have agreed that the document is necessary and have agreed to give their support in providing that document so that we can finalize the JDA. So I think a major positive. We're just now in the process of going back and forward with what we need in that document and what that document needs to look like. So I think good, good progress and a good signal that we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I would also, I think, just sorry before I go on, and I'm talking a lot here, I think also it's important to highlight that, we had hoped that this would have been completed a bit earlier. But we have had in Mozambique at the moment, I think the chairman and CEO of EDM announced earlier this month that he was stepping down. And a new chairman and CEO is to be appointed. And whilst we don't expect this to have a major impact on the project, I think the company has had three or four chairman / CEOs over the course of our project life, and it's never really had an impact on us. But it certainly has affected what's going on in EDM, and it's just meant that this process has probably taken a little longer than we would have liked. But certainly, again, we have everyone around the table. We expect the chairman CEO role to be finalized in the coming weeks. And after that, I think we can expect to have the support document in place. And once that's in place, the timetable to finalize the JDA is very much agreed. We're looking at a process that's under 3 months. And we're off to the races at that stage. So sorry, very long-winded response. I hope that sort of gave you sort of an overview of what we were trying to say in those two sentences.
Yeah, no, exactly that. I mean, that's why, a podcast is sort of here, because, in text, it's often hard to sort of decipher what exactly has been said, but that was nice to expand on that. So I'm sure the shareholders there will be pleased to hear that. Marvellous stuff. One final thing. Hanno, as always, three quick reasons why someone listening who's not following the story should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure, Justin. Well, the first one is that we're the most developed coal to power plant project in the region. The second is we have identified and are currently under detailed negotiation or advanced discussions with two major players in the power space, General Electric and CMEC, who are looking to provide the bulk of the equity finance, as well as the debt finance, as well as the expertise to build finance and operate this thing. And finally, we are in the process of moving forward with government with support agreements, as well as the JDA, as well as the shareholder loan. So there are a number of work initiatives going on here, which means we have a number of milestones that are all moving forward, and sort of early term news flow over the coming months as we look to finalise everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Hanno, good to chat to you. And like I said, lots of things going on. So hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Greg Bandy, Managing Director of Red Emperor Resources. RMP is the ticker there. Greg, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, it's good to get you on, because I've seen your company be quite highly followed on Vox over the last few days. I do the top five on the podcast every day, and I've mentioned your company quite a few times, and you've had some strong rises. And we're going to why that's happened in a bit. But before we do, Greg, people listening, not familiar with Red Emperor, can you summarise what the company's all about, please?
I can do that relatively succinctly. We're an oil and gas exploration company. We are dual listed in both the UK on the AIM market and in Australia on the ASX, currently focused on a relatively new acquisition, which is a joint venture in Alaska. We also have another project in Southeast Asia in the Philippines. And under current management and in this iteration have been around for the last, 6 or 7 years exploring for oil and gas as part of joint ventures.
Yeah, well, listen, I know some people will know that you are, sort of partnership there with 88 Energy, and I've had Dave Wall when he first came on, actually, when 88 Energy started up there in Alaska. He came on quite a few times. But so we know the size of the prize is very big up there, but where are you then? Take us through the prospect. How big is your share of that, and what do you know about it? And first, Dave, first, Greg.
So we're on the North Slope of Alaska, one of the oiliest parts of North America, home to multi-billion barrel oil fields, a lot and almost all of the majors from ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips have assets and producing assets in and around the North Slope of Alaska. And many of your listeners and investors would have heard of fields such as Prudhoe Bay and Kuparak, home to about 12.5 and 2 billion barrels respectively. So we are in a very oily part of the world. This opportunity that we're currently focused on, we've only just completed on, literally, I want to say 2 months ago. And we've been pretty active since then in terms of progressing with our permitting, because we're looking to drill this prospect, our number one lead and prospect on our blocks, in the first couple of months of next year. So permitting has been full steam ahead, but we've literally just signed a rig contract this week. So we've had some good news flow, and we believe we're poised to, have a very high impact event early in 2019.
Yeah. So the Wix prospect. So far, so just go over again the prospect there, the potential size of the resource there, if you could, Greg.
As a best estimate prospective resource target, we're targeting about 400 million barrels of recoverable oil. Red Emperor's share of that is in the joint venture is 31.5%. Net revenue interest is a little bit lower than that after state taxes, I think at about 26-27%. We're paying 35% of all costs as part of the joint venture. Our transaction partner, Great Bear Petroleum, who the consortium engaged with to acquire this asset, we're carrying them through 10% equity interest in this particular well and exploration play. So paying 35% to earn 31.5% of 400 million barrels, right next door to and adjacent to one of the, if not the largest, conventional oil discovery in the United States in the last 30 years. And since that discovery, there's been two more discoveries along trend by ConocoPhillips, further franking the area and the jurisdiction and the geology that we are targeting. So, we are in directly adjacent neighbourhood to significantly large and world-class oil discoveries, and we're very excited to be there.
Yeah, so about 126 million barrels net to you, and so I suppose people do the math.
Net to us, and probably a fraction less than that after royalties in a production scenario, but certainly in excess of 100 million barrels.
Yeah.
Success case of the size and magnitude that we're hoping for would be very much a company maker for somebody of our size and market capitalization as we currently stand.
Absolutely, because what is it at the moment? Around about 10 million market cap, so people can do the math on that if there was success. Of course, it's high impact. What are the chances of success here then, Greg?
Look, that's very much how long's a piece of string type question, and you ask seven different geologists and they'll give you seven different answers, but the joint venture between us, 88 Energy and Otto, are very similarly and technically aligned. We've got it about sort of 30%, one in three type chance, which is pretty good for an exploration well. It's not wildcat drilling. It's not in the middle of nowhere where there's no well control and there's no geological understanding. But by the same token, it is exploration. So it comes with the inherent risks of not knowing what's at the bottom of a well. We believe it ticks all the boxes that you would like to see for something as robust as it is. It's certainly not a slam dunk, but it's by no means wildcat exploration drilling. That's why they put up the net. You've got to have a crack to find these prizes, and that's exactly what our adjacent neighbours did about 6 years ago when Bill Armstrong from Armstrong Oil and Gas drilled in a virgin neighbourhood on the North Slope, and 19 successful wells later, it had 19 discoveries where there wasn't one previously. So we're hoping to repeat some of that success. We're hoping to extend the field laterally to the east, where he's extended it to the south, where we're looking in a known area where there is oil, and February can't get here quick enough.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that when companies want geologists come up with this chance of success number, you often think that's got to be slightly subjective as well, isn't it? So there's room for error in that, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a bit of a permutation matrix of your chance of oil migrating into a sealed trap area, and a chance of formation, a chance of permeability. And so if you multiply a number and a high number of success enough times by the same number, you eventually whittle that down. And while 30%, seems like a relatively low number, it suggests that there's a 70% chance of failure. It's a result of a large number of high chances of inputs along the matrix, I guess. So it's an inexact science, as I said, and I'm not a geologist, but I know how they calculate their chances of success, and I know that they would all rather be measured after the fact rather than before, because predicting these things is not as easy as it might sound by just throwing out a number.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're hoping to start that drilling in Q1 2019. So between now and then, pretty much what is it, all sort of permitting, but is it formalities really?
So there's permitting. A rig contract has been signed. There'll be a rig inspection. There'll be a shakedown of the rig. There'll be development programs. There'll be construction of ice roads. You can only drill in Alaska in the winter, in the winter months. So you need a layer of permafrost. Then you need to construct some ice roads so you can get access to your areas. That will all be part of the process, as well as you said, permitting, which is progressing as expected, if not a little bit quicker. As mentioned earlier, February is sort of a target date in our minds that we can hopefully be spudding this well. We've got the winter Alaskan window during which to drill, but we are confident, if all things go to plan, that we can be certainly forward of the first half of the first quarter in 2019.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Greg, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing there and the progress you're making but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
I'm not sure I could come up with three reasons. I could certainly tell you that at a market cap, I think, as you said, of around about £10 million and a company that's well-funded to commit to something of this size and scale, it's almost one of those. If it comes in, I can't afford not to own any, because the size of the prize is so big that it would have such a material impact to our market cap. It's high risk. We're aware of that, so it's not for everybody. It shouldn't make up 100% of your portfolio. But those people that like to add more speculative stocks to their portfolio, or if nothing else, at least watch them. This is one that you would definitely watch going around, because the size of a success is so material that it would have a material impact on a portfolio, or at least skew it somewhat in the upwards direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you know what the kind of cost per barrel would be if you have success there? What would be the operating cost there?
Operating costs are variable across the North Slope, but what I can tell you is that we are immediately adjacent to not only infrastructure, but imminent in terms of pipelines to tap into, but imminent development with the Horseshoe discovery being part of the Pikka development from Armstrong, Repsol, and now Oil Search. So we've got massive development occurring next year and onwards for their production facilities to ramp up in 2020. So it's by no means stranded. It's right next to infrastructure and soon to be growing infrastructure and development. So cost to produce should be as low as you might want in an on-field case in an oily part of the world. So success will be very easily monetized.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. Greg, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me right now on the podcast is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Very good, very good.
Okay, what's happening in the bigger cap space of the markets? What's out? Who's got news out, Chris?
Well, Bit of late August action and a couple of well-known names. The first would have to be Scottish and Southern Electricity. No doubt it's a big, you know, utility supplier, obviously, to many people, but also a very popular income share. I think I've elsewhere called it the most boring share in the FTSE 100. And I think, you know, people tend to buy it for the dividend yield and not much else, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they did actually do something quite interesting early this year. Even I had to admit that. They linked up, or they proposed a link up with Innogy, which is one of these funnily named but other big electricity suppliers. This is something which sort of came out of the national power business a few years back. Anyhow, this is like any combination. You know, whenever we see that a combination, there's scope for sort of efficiency gains, efficiencies, job cuts, that type of thing. And today, this morning, they've actually got a preliminary view from the authorities. You know, inevitably, when two big energy suppliers talk about, you know, coming together at some level, the authorities have to get involved, the regulators have to get involved. The CMA, who are the people who have to opine, in their provisional view, basically said it didn't raise any competition concerns. And I would actually agree with that. You know, the reality is, you know, we've gone from the big six suppliers, possibly now to the big five. But the reality is there's all sorts of scrappy other ones out there. There's more than enough choice. We can debate whether energy prices are too high or too low. But the reality is, if you want to switch from one to t'other, you've got more than enough choice to do that. The fact that they all tend to raise the prices at broadly the same time, that's something for another time. But what's kind of interesting here is, as I say, SSE, boring business. It's beloved by dividend friendly people. Not much of a reaction in the shares, actually. And I took a quick look at the share price over the last year, and you can see the bounce a few months ago when they announced this deal. It sort of went from 12 and change to £14 and change. But it's kind of regressed all of that since. And I'm thinking to myself, actually, even I have to admit, it's a bit down and out at the moment, and it's a little bit rude from a sort of a total return basis. You know, you're picking up your 5% plus yield, actually a bit more than 5% today. And obviously the big fear is that the government does something stupid on the energy side in terms of price caps or more price caps or other issues. But the reality is, you make these companies making 2% margins. How much less money do we want them to make unless we nationalise them, which I guess is another fear lurking in the background. The bottom line is, actually, I think SSE and Centrica, which is obviously another big listed player, I think actually are offering pretty reasonable total return scope from here, out of favour, big 5% plus yields, not going away, and in the case of SSE, doing the sensible thing in terms of trying to hook up with a competitor.
Yeah, and let's be honest, it's bottom right of the chart stuff, pretty much. It's bounced. I mean, it did bounce at almost close to £12. Now it went up to sort of 14.50, come back to 12.50, which is a retest of that level. So, yeah, you could suggest, I'd never suggest this, but it could be close to the bottom here. So, you know, you said sentiment is all down on these, so that's often a good time to buy, isn't it, you know?
That's right. That, you know, there are political... We understand these are political stocks as well, but these boys are well aware of all the political ramifications, et cetera. My observation is generally when you get a bit of consolidation in a sector, that tends to be quite good, and my feeling is there's probably a little bit of value, at least from a total return perspective, you've got that benefit of dividends too. So don't be shy about holding... one or two of these, I would say.
Marvellous stuff. What else are you looking at, Chris?
Well, got to look at Hays. Hays, obviously, big and well-known recruitment name. Interesting company. Today it had its numbers, its full-year numbers, end of June, financial year-end. And they pushed through £1 billion worth of revenues, net fees, for the first time, which is clearly a very good achievement for them. And quite rightly, they've self-applauded in their statement today. And record profits, dividend up, you know, well more than 10%, et cetera, et cetera. So a good set of numbers at face value from Hays. So the question is then, why is the shares down, as I'm looking at the moment, thick end of 3%? And I think the reality is, as always with shares, you've got to think about tomorrow. It's not just about what's gone, it's what's coming. And the big issue for Hays is, of course, what comes next. I mean, after some really damn good growth numbers, and I have to say Hays is not really just the UK, it's a very international recruitment business, big offices in the Americas, in Europe, in the rest of the world. And what's the most striking aspect of their numbers is there's been a recovery in the UK. You know, immediately after the Brexit referendum vote, it got a bit patchy for the recruitment companies. They finally lapped those easy comps. They're actually moving ahead now, both in terms of revenues and profits, so that's better. Still pretty muted compared to the rest of the world, but what's interesting, I think, is that the rest of the world is going gangbusters, you know, double-digit growth. And the trouble is, you look at the world today and you think to yourself, well, yeah, I can see the opportunities, but I can see the threats as well. And I think that's the big fear now overhanging Hays. Recruitment is very, very sensitive to economic growth, as we all know. So I think if you look at the chart, it's failed now three times at this £2 odd level. And again, this morning it's failed too. It was it closed yesterday above £2 a share, and today it's trading below that level. So, you know, fascinating stuff. My feeling is Hays is priced for perfection at the moment. Good company doing good things. It's just what comes next, and the market is correctly, I think, a little bit sceptical in terms of can they match, you know, very sort of full and excitable sort of expectations, and hence why I think the shares have rolled a bit. I would chill here. I think if you're gonna do anything with Hays, it's probably to try to help you find a new job rather than buy the shares per se.
Yeah, I mean, we've had record numbers of people being employed. Where do you go from there? You know, it's like everyone's in a job, pretty much, or want to be in a job. But also, they must be quite annoyed that their ticker is Has. And I just looked up for Hays, and no one's got the ticker Hays. Why don't they just go for the ticker Hays? They, you know, if they can get that, it's odd. But maybe they should recruit somebody who's into that kind of stuff, you know?
I think what you need to do, Justin, is you need to approach them for a consultancy contract, one-off bespoke consultancy contract, million quid for a thorough review into which ticker they should use. And obviously after effortless, you know, analysis, you should conclude it should be either the Hay or the Hays ticker, and charge them appropriately for that. Yeah, you know, I think it's the only thing that needs to be done, really.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else, Chris?
Well, one final one, and it's a newbie actually on the market. It floated a couple of months ago, but you've probably seen the ads on TV. You may even be a user. I don't know, some of the listeners, but Amigo, which has sort of got these adverts running around TV. They've been going for a few years now, and essentially it's a shorter term loan lender. They tend to prefer not to lend for more than a few months or a couple of years, and not particularly for a king's ransom, anything up to about £10,000, I believe. But essentially, the company that is sort of differential, the reason why it's called Amigo is that you either have a friend or a family member who sort of guarantees your loan if you're the lender. And so Amigo believe this sort of bond, this friendship, this link reduces the credit risk, and obviously gives them the option to tap the guarantor if the original lender decides not to pay back. You know, obviously they charge for the privilege. It's a 50% APR, which is, you know, pretty pretty snappy, to say the least. But the numbers that come out today, big growth of their loan book, 30-odd%. Sure, provisions have gone up, profits have gone up, but the shares have edged down. And I think the reason is that the trouble is this is such a... It's clearly that they're tapping a need. We know that there's 10 to 12 million, as they call them, non-standard borrowers in the UK, people who can't get access to mainstream credit from banks and whatever. I understand that. The trouble is, the background at the moment is just really against these companies. You know, obviously we've had Wonga go under, which was one of the original names, much more payday loan or short-term loan, really high, sky-high interest rates on some of their loans. They've effectively gone under early this week. Obviously, Provident Financial's had an absolute, realm of shockers over the last couple of years. Their shares well down off the highs, and obviously catching out many well-known investors in that. I just think with this area, it's sort of lowish quality. It is tapping a need, I accept that, but it's something which is always exposed to changes in regulation and everything else. And I'm not particularly surprised to see the sort of the combination of company floating, struggling to hold the IPO price. I think it's the Daily Mail's come out with a couple of articles, sort of a bit negative of them, etc., etc. I personally, despite the fact they've got big old growth of their loan book, I would be steering clear, both as a share and I guess as somebody either to guarantee a loan or to borrow from them directly.
Yeah, and it seems to me like a recipe for disaster amongst friends who can't pay their loans and they get their mate pulled in, to cover them. But there we are. But friends and business, you know what they say.
That's right. Never a borrower nor a lender be. The trouble is, of course, we all understand that the way the economy is dynamic is that you've got to have some lending in the economy. You've got to be borrowing. The banks do play a role in this. We all understand it, and not everybody can tap the banks in a conventional manner. My gut feel would be, if you're thinking about tapping these sorts of guys aggressively or even moderately, think about whether you can reorganise your life in a different way first in terms of your spending or your earning potential before you get too fruity on this front. But there you go. As I say, kind of interesting to see how they perform since the IPO. Not been a particularly good performance. The share is below its IPO price. I'm kind of guessing that this may persist.
Excellent stuff, Chris. Thanks for that. And we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Block Energy, BLOE. Of course, Paul was on the podcast yesterday. At three, Flying Brands, FBDU, rising today. At three, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG. Of course, you can catch up with a podcast, with a question and answer podcast with the guys there on... Actually, in fact, they've got the front page, you can see it there, voxmarkets.co.uk. At two, most followed company, massive rise yesterday. I think we're up to close to 400% up. Tuple, T-O-O-P. It's a micro-cap stock, underlining... my thoughts about microcap stocks, and they're the big flyers. So check out my videos, by the way. I'm doing a series of videos, and I highlight where the areas are, of what valuation the biggest flyers are likely to happen in. And at number one, it's Rhea Bold Resources. RBD is the ticker there, most followed company. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, I just spoke to Hanno. Nkundizi Energy, General Update. At four, Vasarian, Award of Share Options to Directors. At three, Tilau Energy, Final Results, TLOU, of course, ticker there. At two, UK Oil and Gas, Acquisition of Further Interest in Horse Hill. At number one, most liked RNS came from Renewable Resources, Update on California, Discovery at VG3 Well. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget. I say don't forget, I mentioned it before, actually. But please do check out my video series on YouTube. Just do a search for Justin Waite, Lessons Learned in Small Cap Stocks. I'm up to lesson five, halfway through the series. They're all free, of course, to watch. And by all means, subscribe if you could. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.